little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes made of ticky-tacky. Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes just the same as a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one.
You're listening to The Doug Haldeman Show on FM News Talk 97.1.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Doug Haldeman, here with my co-host, Tammy Haldeman. Welcome back, Tammy.
Thanks for having me today.
We also have our producer in studio, Tom Turbrock. Welcome, Tom.
Good afternoon, you too.
So if you'd like to reach us on our off-air number, if you have a question you'd like to have us answer on any show, just you can call and leave a voicemail, 314-472-DOUG, 314-472-DOUG. Leave a voicemail and leave a question that you'd like us to answer on the air, and we'd be happy to do that for you. So, guys, in the mortgage industry, it's amazing how complicated the mortgage industry has become because there are so many different types of scenarios that people have.
Yep.
And you know, I think people want to simplify it. You know, a lot of times we'll see people that think they make a certain amount of money on their taxes and just automatically think they should be able to qualify for a loan because maybe they have perfect credit. Well, in this day and age, there's so much more to it. And on a daily and weekly basis, we run across so many scenarios that get really difficult. And what I wanted to do is go through a couple of these, and we're going to talk about income specifically today.
Okay.
Because when someone has a salaried job or they have an hourly job, it's pretty easy to calculate their income. When you get somebody that's commission starts to get a little more complicated, somebody self-employed really gets complicated. What we're going to talk about today is some of the more obscure sources of income, and these do come up really, really, really frequently. So, mm-hmm. You know, Tammy, I know you have a list of them here, and why don't you?
I do.
You know,
I can go through them.
Yeah, let's start on what do you have first on your list?
Well, alimony or child support. This is one of them that is very, very popular these days.
Right. Absolutely. We see this all the time with people that are divorced. Sometimes they're not even divorced and maybe getting child support still. And you know, when can you count that income? So, you know, I guess one of the things before we even talk about the specifics of that one, here's kind of an overarching principle when it comes to all these alternative sources of income, and that's we have to think about the documentation to prove that you've already been receiving income, because that's one thing that has to happen. And then mm-hmm. The other thing that lenders want to know is that you're going to be receiving income for the next 3 years.
Right.
If you're not likely to receive it for the next 3 years, then they're not going to count it, and that's going to apply pretty much every one of these that we're going to go through today.
Right, that's true. And that is true in the child support and alimony situation.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about alimony and child support. So alimony, more common word for it now is maintenance in Missouri.
Right.
And you know, so with maintenance or child support, they have to have been receiving it for 6 months.
For 6 months, okay.
Before you can count the income.
Okay.
So that's a big deal because there's so many deadbeat dads out there or deadbeat moms that actually don't pay the child support that – you know, just because it's said in a divorce decree that it's owed, mm-hmm. doesn't mean that they're actually going to pay it.
And when they come to you, they need to bring that divorce decree or separation agreement to you in the qualifying steps.
Right, because in the divorce decree or separation agreement, it's going to outline how much the mm-hmm. court has said should be paid in maintenance or should be paid in child support, and for what period of time.
Right. So a love note on a napkin from your ex is not going to work.
Right, absolutely.
That won't be it.
Okay. No.
Yeah, that's not good enough.
Just in case you thought about it.
But okay, so
not going to work.
So let's look at these. Here's where it gets complicated with maintenance, is that a typical time frame for maintenance would be 3 years. Mm-hmm. Well, we have to document a three-year continuance, so they should match up perfectly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, because by the time you can document you've been receiving it for 6 months, now you may not have 3 years into the future that you're going to continue to receive it. So sometimes maintenance goes a lot longer than that, and that's fine. But if it's only 3 years that you're receiving it,
you can't even count it.
You're probably never going to be able to count maintenance in that situation.
Okay.
Child support, on the other hand, so you're not going to be able to get a loan immediately. You're going to have to wait until you've been receiving child support for 6 months. Okay. We can see canceled checks, or we can see bank statements showing that it's been deposited in your account for the last 6 months, and a divorce decree that documents that you're actually supposed to receive it. Okay, and once we can document those, then we have to document the age of the child. Okay, because if the child
is 17 or
if they're mm-hmm. not, if they're at an age where you're probably not going to continue to receive it for three mm-hmm. more years,
mm-hmm.
then you're probably not going to get you're not going to be able to count that income.
Right.
So those are the major nuances when it comes to maintenance and child support.
All right. So number two or bullet point is capital gains income.
Notice. All right. So capital gain. So capital gains and losses are traditionally short-term gains or short-term losses. Okay. And what that means is that they don't typically happen in recurring nature. Okay. Mm-hmm. So for somebody to count capital gain income, we have to be able to show that they've made capital gain income for the last 3 years, and they also still own the assets that are going to continue to produce capital gains. Mm-hmm. So capital gain would be money you make on stocks would be
okay.
capital gain to me.
Okay. Okay.
If you flip a property, okay, that's capital gain. And a lot of people love capital gain because it's taxed at a lower rate. Okay. However, much harder to use that income on your tax, you know, on your taxes that's going to qualify for a mortgage.
Okay.
So very, very important. We'd have to see you've been receiving it for 3 years and can document you still own the asset that's going to produce capital gain in the future.
So if I come to you with a potential capital gain, what kind of documentation do I need to bring?
Well, instead of 2 years tax returns, we'd need 3 years tax returns. We would average the last 3 years of capital gain.
Okay.
Unless the most recent year went down, then mm-hmm. we wouldn't even average them. We actually would use the lowest. We'd use mm-hmm. worst case scenario, unfortunately.
Okay.
Because what if it's going down right now?
Right. And see, and I always thought capital gains was just like a one-time transaction. You know, I make a profit on a house that I'm selling.
It usually is, and that's why they don't want to count it, because there's mm-hmm. nothing that's going to make that recur into the future.
Right, right. All right. So how about disability income, long-term disability?
All right. So that's another one with a case where we really need to document they've been receiving it. They don't have to have been receiving that for multiple years, but they have to be receiving it, have an award letter, and then we have to document that they're going to receive it 3 years into the future.
Okay.
That's not always easy to do with disability unless it's long-term disability and it's deemed to be a permanent disability.
Right,
now,
right.
We can't ask about what the medical condition is.
Right.
That's not allowed. That's a so we can't ask that, but we do have to document that it's going to continue.
You know, that is something my dad and mom had to go through when dad was, it was a long-term disability. And there was a law or something right in the time frame where he had to go and get reevaluated every other year. And so then they couldn't use that disability income.
Right. Very common, because the government wants to cut that off as soon as
right.
they can.
Right. And then finally, after I think 4 years, I don't know, I'd have to ask them, but you know, he finally got the long-term disability. Didn't have to prove it.
And here's where this is actually doing the borrower a favor in many cases, is that a lot of people will buy a house without really, you know, they think that they're going to keep receiving money long-term, and they don't.
Mm-hmm.
So this is actually protecting them, because there's nothing worse than buying a house and now all of a sudden you can't afford to keep it.
Right.
Because that long-term disability has been cut off.
Yeah, you really, you know, and I think our advice would be the same, is to kind of always choose that lower income anyway before you buy, not the highest income.
Right. In case mm-hmm. you just joined us, you're listening to the Doug Haldeman Show on FM News Talk 97.1. We're talking about alternative sources of income that can qualify for a mortgage.
Okay. So now we're on employment offers or contracts.
All right. So this is a really interesting one, because we get this frequently, that somebody – especially on relocation. So somebody's relocating to St. Louis and relocating to a new area. How soon can they qualify for the next house? Okay, most places will say that they actually have to have started at the house. Started at the job.
Mm-hmm.
And be there for 30 days. We actually can do it within, you know, even before they start the job.
Mm.
Okay, we can do it up to 60 days. We can close 60 days before they even start the job,
mm-hmm.
so that a family can relocate somewhere. We can close 60 days before, but we have to get the employment contract from the future employer, and it has to be something that guarantees them a certain wage.
Wow, this is making me think of our friend that's going through that now, when he tried to sell his house.
Right. Absolutely.
So did he qualify? Did he get the employer contracts? Or
This person had already actually started the job that you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
And had been there for almost 60 days and then lost their job.
Okay.
Right before closing.
Okay. Wow. And that's tough. It is. And to count on that income.
Ooh. Right. So an employment contract, I think in most of those cases, those are guaranteed contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it a little bit easier. They don't have to guarantee it for 3 years into the future, though.
Okay.
So that's good, because very, very few employers are going to do that.
All right. So how about non-occupying co-borrower income?
All right, so
Explain that one. That's a mouthful.
Right, non-occupant co-bar. What that means is, here's where we see this. So, like, one of the last ones I did, it actually had two husband and wife that were residents they were in their residency after medical school. They were residency to become doctors. Okay, so they're already doctors, but they're not making a lot of money yet. They have massive student loans to pay back. And because they're not making a lot of money as residents, then they have all these student loans, they couldn't qualify on their own. So they brought in a parent to it's called a non-occupant co-borrower, meaning that they don't live in the house, they live somewhere else, but they're basically co-signing on the loan. Okay, so they have to be different and give it a little bit different term, non-occupant co-borrower. We can count that income, okay, as long as the non-occupant co-borrower has
good credit.
Right, has good credit, and they add to the income, then we can definitely use that income to help somebody qualify for a loan. We do it a lot.
Right, okay.
Or we'll see it sometimes if you have a husband and wife and one spouse has bad credit and can't be on the loan.
Okay.
Then one of the parents may go on as a non-occupant co-borrower to help the kid out.
Got it. Hopefully we don't have to do that.
yeah. Hopefully we don't for any of our kids. We'll teach them about credit when they're really young.
Yes, right. Okay. So here we go, Tom. Retirement. Retirement pension income.
It's creeping up, man.
Yes, it is creeping up. All right. So when it comes to retirement or pension income, this gets a little more complicated, too, because let's assume that they are retired. We have to document that they're receiving retirement. Okay, they have to have only been receiving it for a couple months is fine, so we can see that they've been receiving the income, and then we know that they're going to receive it in the future, so we have to get the pension documents that will tell how long they're going to receive the income. Okay, so that's pretty important. So it has to be continuing in the future for at least 3 years. If we don't think there's a likelihood of 3-year continuance of it, then we can't do the loan. So that's pretty important. And that's not usually that difficult to document.
Mm-hmm.
Usually we can come up with those documents pretty easily.
Okay.
What's next on your list?
I have Social Security income.
All right. So Social Security income, that's another one where we have to document that they've been receiving it, and then we have to document that they're going to receive it for 3 years in the future. Good luck on that one, because if they're receiving Social Security income because they're at retirement age,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty easy. But if they're young and receiving Social Security benefits, then that's something that's a little tougher because that gets canceled by the government all the time.
So just to back up again really quickly, what kind of paperwork do I need to bring to you if I have a co-borrower income situation or the pension income or Social Security income?
Okay, so with Social Security or even pension, award letters is typically what you get from the government or from your pension. You have an award letter that tells how much money you're awarded on a monthly basis.
Okay.
So that's the documents we would need.
That you need.
Need the last couple of years. With a non-occupant co-borrower, it's different because whatever they do for a living will determine the documents we need.
Okay.
Traditionally, you're going to need a couple of years of W-2s, tax returns.
Okay.
Updated the paychecks, pay stubs.
Right.
Okay. Right. But it could be a lot more than that
if your parent is self-employed, right, that's where my brain was going.
Right.
You're going to need a lot more.
Right. Then there may be a lot more that we need.
Okay. So really just call you.
Right. Right. Call us because we can help walk through that scenario. What else is on your list, Tam?
All right. I have temporary leave income.
All right. So temporary leave income, where this comes in is maternity leave is the most common.
Mm-hmm.
And they made it illegal to discriminate against somebody that's out on maternity leave. So we can't deny somebody a loan because they're on maternity leave. But what we have to do is document when are they going to go back to work. And if they're going to go back to work before the first payment, then we can use their full income of what they were making before they left work.
Oh, I could see where that'd be risky for the lender.
It is, because you're assuming they go back to work full-time.
Right.
Sometimes a mom may want to go back to work part-time.
Right.
Or maybe they don't go back to work at all.
Right.
So we have to definitely be cautious as lenders with that. But they're very, very doable situations, and we do them all the time.
Okay.
We can't let that stand in the way of home ownership.
Right. Well, I mean, I could see where you would that'd be probably one of the riskier ones in all of this list.
Right. Yeah, it definitely would be one of the riskiest ones in the list. I think that's it's something that, like unemployment benefits would be another mm-hmm. one that would be pretty mm-hmm. risky.
That's true, too.
Trying a loan on that. And we only do somebody with unemployment benefits if they're a seasonal worker,
mm-hmm.
and they may get them on a regular basis, and we can prove that, document they've gotten them for a couple years in a row.
Right.
Then we can do it. So here's the moral to the story on all these, because there are a lot more details we could go through on it. The moral of the story is that these get complicated, and you can't make an assumption that you're definitely going to qualify. You want to make sure you get some advice early on.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get in for a consultation, get fully pre-approved, reach out to me, and I'll get you set up for consultation with my team. Reach out to me at 314-472-DOUG, 314-472-DOUG, or visit our website, DougHaldeman.com. Shoot me a message on there, and I'd love to talk to you and find out what we can do to make sure that we can maximize your chances for home ownership in the future, and you know, and just know that you're going to be in the best situation to succeed as you move down the road. So coming up, there are some strange economic indicators out there, and most economic indicators, I would say, are extremely boring. Okay, I certainly think they are. So
right.
Coming up, we're going to be covering six unusual economic indicators that are anything but boring. Kind of like the underwear index.
Yeah.
What?
Underwear?
The underwear index. You listen to the Doug Haldeman Show on FM News Talk 97.1.
All went to the university. There they were put in boxes, and they came out all the same. There's a doctor and a lawyer and a business executive. And